We have a proclivity for positivity, yeah.
Hello, pod people. Thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of Proclivity for Positivity, a Through the Abyss production. This is a new show that I am doing with Steve, who you know and love from some of the latest Through the Abyss podcast episodes. And first of all, we're just going to kind of tell you what this show is all about. I'm sure you've all heard of the power of positive thinking. Just the fact that most people agree that having a positive attitude, having positive thoughts, helps you to live a more positive and happy life, right? Kind of like the way people say you are what you eat. Others might say you are what you think. And the world is riddled with very negative things. In fact, in kind of a little bit of the research of looking up positive stories and things that could go into making an episode of this type, I will say from my standpoint, it's hard to find any news or any information about things that are going on in the world that are not extremely depressing and extremely violent negative things. Steve, did you have a lot of luck finding positive things when you were looking up kind of topics and things like that?
No, not really. It was difficult to isolate stories that really just examine, you know, what things were happening in the world that we could enjoy and be grateful for, or that were just a happy story.
Same from me, as I said. So one thing that I've been very interested in through some of my studies is something called the positivity effect. As older adults get higher in age, they tend to have more emotional happiness than younger adults, and some people believe that that could be just because their lives are kind of more set sometimes, I mean, not always, and that they no longer have to run the rat race in the world, and they're able to kind of live without feeling the pressure to do or perform, right? And those could be things that are definitely in existence, but I always wondered if you could get that positive mentality where older adults are looking for the, not just that they feel happier, but they're also looking for the positive aspects of things, and it's making improved quality of life. If you could get people that were not in that age range to also start kind of looking at things that way, maybe you could improve all kinds of lives.
I don't know. I think when you're older, maybe the reason that you're happier is just because you resigned yourself to the lack of expectation that you know, comes with youth. Like, you know, when you're younger, you have expectations of what the world will be and what people will be. And I think that the older you get, you just sort of settle into an understanding of what it is. This is what it is. And so, you know, there's an old saying, expectation is the death of serenity. And so maybe in a pessimistic way, the older people are happier just because they stop wanting as much.
Yeah, I think stop wanting as much and stop feeling the pressure of the world to perform. Like I was kind of saying earlier, it's like you no longer have to meet anyone's expectations. You don't expect anything from them, and you don't have to give them anything, right? So those are important things. But I think those are things that you could actually be a successful human being, but not feel the need to perform and learn to not expect things from people as at a younger age, right? But that said, the point being that a big part of that positivity is that older people do look at the happy things in life, and we are bombarded. Just look up today's news. And if you don't find that 90% of what you're looking at is like wars and violence and murder and robberies, and then you're looking at a much different news source than what I've found.
Oh yeah, we're in a culture of outrage now. And it's a prison of our own making. For whatever reason, I think people really like to feel outraged, and maybe it's a feeling of superiority over people. Like, well, my group likes this, and your group hates this, and so I'm obviously superior to you. Or, you know, politicians have tapped into it. You know,
right.
the culture of outrage is what drives people to the ballot boxes and keeps them there, or keeps the needle moving. We watch videos on every source that we can about you know, somebody doing something terrible at Target or some police officer treating a suspect poorly, and there's an addiction there, and I don't know if it's, I don't know what the reason is. Maybe we watch those videos because we want to feel better about ourselves and our own situations, and so it's easier to look at someone who's got it worse.
Right.
But it's certainly an addiction that we've come to be attached to.
Yeah, it's an addiction and it's its own expectation, because I think in a way, like, you almost stop believing that good things happen. But I promise that they still happen, and they still happen in abundance. They're just not what we look at.
Yeah.
Right? Those stories aren't the only stories that exist. So, what is the proclivity for positivity? What do we plan to do? Number one, we plan to bring stories that aren't really getting coverage, but because they actually have happy outcomes and they're not depressing and they're good things that people are doing in the world. And we also plan to do hopefully interviews of people that have overcome obstacles and have shown great human resilience. And that said, any listeners that want to hit us up and have stories that they want to tell us that are positive, whether they just want us to relay what's occurred to them or a story that they've heard about, or if it's something where you want us to interview you and kind of let you tell a story that you think would impact the world. I mean, it's just basically going to be a forum for getting out what the world isn't getting right now, which is the happier side of life, which still exists. We're just not seeing it on a daily basis.
Right. No, I'd love to hear what people want to hear, but I think there's a value in affirming what this world is capable of being and what humanity is capable of doing and what there is to celebrate in this world.
Yeah, I agree.
I think people might want to get to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
Tell us about yourself.
All right. Well, I actually am going to tell you a little bit about myself by telling you a story of what I did this weekend, because it shows you what an absolute nincompoop that I can be. So... there's a place in Fremont, California. I live in Alameda, so I'm like 40 miles from there, 25 miles, somewhere in that range from there. And it's called Mission Peak. And one of my coworkers told me, hey, why don't you go check out Mission Peak? I went with my boyfriend. We went to the top. It's beautiful. You'll love it. This person isn't someone that's been hiking for like long periods of time, right? So I'm like, if they can do it, I can do it. So it should be fine. And so I go to Mission Peak and I don't take any water. I put on sunscreen before I went, and I didn't take any extra sunscreen with me, and I start walking to the top of Mission Peak. So somewhere after an hour and a half of going pretty much straight uphill, I see these people coming down, and everyone coming down looks happy, right? So I'm like, this is like, can't be that bad. Everyone's smiling on the way back, but somehow I'm like dying halfway to the place. I know I was halfway because I asked these people, I was like, is there even a top? And they're like, oh, yeah, it's beautiful up there. You'll love it. And I was like, is it close? And they're like, you're like halfway. So at this point, I've walked an hour and a half. I feel like I'm going to die. But turning back after an hour and a half doesn't seem reasonable either, right? So I continue on.
Why not?
I mean, I probably should have. Like, if I had known, I probably should have had I realized the extent of it, because it only gets steeper. And I keep going, and I actually had to stop three times. But not because, like, my legs were tired, not because I just couldn't move forward, but my lungs were actually burning from, like, trekking it straight uphill, right? So I finally, like, I get to the very point where you're going to go up the last part of the peak, and I sit down, and thank God this little old lady sits on a bench beside me, and she's like, do you have water? And I'm like, no, I don't have water. She's like, I bring extra bottles all the time for people. I have 6 bottles. Take a bottle. She gives me a bottle of water. She might have even saved my life. I don't know. Because it was, like, grueling. And anyways, I make it to the top of this peak. And then the way back is much better because you're going straight downhill. But when I get home and I look up this hike that I just assumed wouldn't be that hard. Number one, it said it's a challenging hike. It said even people who are super fit agree that it's a workout. And, like, I should have been way more prepared. Number two, it's 3 hours to the peak, which means I just hiked 6 hours because I went 3 hours up and 3 hours back. And then number three, I texted my friend at work. I'm like, what the F were you thinking? Like, you should have warned me of this. And they're like, I only went halfway up. You went to the top. So, yeah. I went on this super challenging hike, and I just assumed the person went to the top, and I didn't take... I mean, don't ever go on a hike without water, even if it's an easy hike. But for me, hiking is you go out in the woods, and you walk around. Not a lot of hills. You like looking at the trees. This was like uphill. Like, intense. My legs are burning today. This was yesterday. So my legs are burning the hill. But that's the kind of shit I do, right? I always, like, I'm a little bit impulsive. I didn't think through my hiking extravaganza. But, yeah. So that was my weekend. What did you do this weekend?
I'll tell you what. The character in your story that I really continue to focus on is that little old lady.
She was German, too. Like, she had, like, a super, like German accent. She was very cool.
Did she have like a big cooler bag with her, or
she had a backpack, but she was like head wrapped, like she almost like she might have been an angel, I don't know, because she was like not your normal looking hiker. She did have the two ski poles though.
Angels are German? Are we confirming this?
Well, not all throughout history. Not all throughout history.
No, I focus on her because like I think about it from a symbolic standpoint. Like how often in our lives do we enter into an endeavor and we bring necessaries beyond what we need, and in case other people also have needs,
right?
You know, and I'm not just talking about bringing like water for a hike, but like, you know, in our lives, how often do we make room or do we provide resources for others?
Right, like, you know, preemptively provide resources. And, you know, I hadn't really thought of it, but as far as like the proclivity for positivity, this story fits right in because this woman is a Samaritan, right? She purposely takes extra things that people need that she knows they're not going to take with them.
Right, right. And I don't know. I wonder if there's more that we can do in this world to be that, to pack extra water, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think the first step to that is to actually do what she did, which is take the first step and actually think about other human beings, right? Before she went on this walk, she considered other human beings.
Yeah.
Right? Where I said, for me, impulsively, before I went this walk, I didn't even prepare for myself, right? But this woman's preparing for other human beings. She prepared for me.
Right.
So, yeah, it was kind of a miracle.
No, it's not miraculous, or at least it shouldn't be miraculous for us to consider those around.
Yeah.
You know? But, no, that kind of sums you up a little bit.
It does.
I was thinking more some background info. Who are you? And you know, what do you, you know, where's your, or what kind of person you are, that kind of thing.
Mm.
I don't know.
Maybe that's another day.
Okay. All right. Well, if I were to sum up my weekend was really kind of focused around sports. My son plays football. He's 9. And so he's playing in his second season of youth football. And so we went to his game. And I don't know, maybe along the same lines, you know, it was the other schools will come, and it's a whole youth league, right?
Right.
And they come and they play. And this game was a scrimmage. And the parents are expected to sign up to volunteer for different jobs there at the field so that, you know, everything can run smoothly. And one of the jobs is, they call it the chain gang. So if you know anything about football, you know, the idea of the game, you're just trying to move the ball down the field, and you get 4 chances to get 10 yards. And if you don't get it, then the other team takes the ball. And that's called a first down. And so they have, on the sideline, they have 2 poles with, like, orange padding, so it's very brightly lit, connected by a 10-yard chain. And you put one pole where the ball is, starts, and one pole where they have to get. And then there's a third pole that you hold that shows, like, how many attempts you've made. First down, second down, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I volunteered to the chain gang mainly because I get a much better view of the game because I'm right there on the sideline watching it. So I get to see him play a lot closer. If I'm over on the other side, I can barely see. So, but, you know, so it's not complete altruism that I'm volunteering, but I volunteered to do it, and two other parents did, and when it came time for the game to start, the other two parents were not there, and just me. And so, you know, the refs are like, hey, where's the other two people? And I'm like, I'm not really sure. And so I was texting my wife and one of the coaches for the team, the other team, because I'm on their sidelines, is kind of like angrily asking me what's going on. And I, you know, I say I we're missing two people, trying to find them. And so she's like, well, this isn't our responsibility. And I said, well, no, it's not. But two of the parents from that team volunteered to come down and help until the other two parents showed up. And they came and took over. But I don't know. If we're looking at it from the same perspective that we look at you and your bottles of water lady, your German angel, you know, here's a response to a problem. Here's the problem. They're the people that are supposed to accomplish something or, you know, are missing. You know, it's an inconvenience, and the game can't start until those two people are there. And you have, you know, several ways of responding to it. And I was put off by the coach who was angrily, indignantly responding, you know, about how it's not their responsibility to provide parents. I hadn't asked you to provide parents, but still, like, that response doesn't really solve the problem.
No.
Like, here's the problem. You know, we can try to fix it and get this thing going. Right. And so once everything got started, you know, there were no issues, but I don't know, that connected there. But my son is becoming quite he's a good football player.
Awesome.
He's a defender. He had a lot of tackles, took the ball away a few times. And then I coach soccer. I coach girls soccer for the high school where I'm also a teacher. And so we had several games after that. So I coach our junior varsity team, and so we won that game, and we lost a close game. But these were just all of the games were scrimmages, just kind of preparing for a very busy time, and, you know, preparing for the seasons to start.
Right. Yeah. No. It sounds like you're hecka busy. Number one, though, I gotta say, it's almost like shooting the messenger for the coach to say that to you because you're the one parent that showed up. It's like going to work and yelling at your employee who came in when all the other employees didn't, right? Like, it makes no sense.
Right.
Right? But number two, I gotta know, where were the parents? They had to have come with an excuse, right?
That they were running late. They got way late somehow. But I think they had several other kids and other activities, and it slipped their mind.
Yeah.
That they had signed up for it. And it's funny because she wasn't like yelling at me, this coach, but you know, this idea of like,
just it's not their responsibility.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no one wants to step up and just get it done. Yeah, I see what you're saying for sure. But that said, I gotta say, number one, one day I will tell you guys all about my stuff. But number two, one day we will find out more about Steve as well, because Steve being the responsible parent who's the only one that showed up, that's not the old Steve I knew when he was like 20 years old. So he's come a long, long way. Could you imagine at like 19 or 20 that you would be the responsible one?
Oh my God, the idea of my life now compared to what it was 20 years ago is unfathomable.
Yeah.
It's funny, sometimes I, you know, my students in class, they look at me and I realize they see, you know,
they see you now.
They see, you know, teacher, they see, you know, this, you know, pseudo father figure, you know, that's how I come off. But, you know, just thinking like, you have no idea.
No idea.
You have no idea who I be. Yeah. Which is, I mean, not that I was a terrible person.
No, not at all.
Ridiculously irresponsible.
Right.
Yeah, if they dive into your background, you're going to still be at your job and all that. Like, everything's good. It's just that we also were kids at one point, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's enough about us for now. As far as, like we said, we wanted to look at resilient stories and positive stories, and we wanted to kind of ease in as gently as possible, and we thought the best way to do that is something that almost everyone loves. I say almost because there's some people that don't, but they're probably sociopaths. But animals, right? Like, you walked your dog today, right?
That's right.
No, I haven't had a pet in a while, but I definitely love animals, and I used to have beloved dogs and grew up with cats, and animals make people's lives better. So we've got several stories we wanted to jump into as far as animals go. And the first one I wanted to start with is something that I'm sure that you guys have probably been hearing about. It's really weird. And if you look at the still picture, you can kind of see what they're talking about. But I'm talking about the Chinese sun bear at the zoo in China that people are saying they think is a man in a suit. And China has actually had to speak out and say that these bears, this bear is like a legitimate bear. And the reason I'm laughing is because when I see the picture of the sun bear leaning up against the glass, its head clearly looks like a real bear, but its ass, right? Like, the backside of this fucking bear. Sorry, guys, just because we're positive doesn't mean we don't swear. Because you can be positively fucking happy about life. So, that said, this damn bear has, like, that wrinkled ass that looks like when someone passes 40-something and they're starting to get a little bit of that belly, but they're still wearing, like, the skinny jeans with the chain, and it's got, like, wrinkles in it. Like, you can see where people are like, it looks like a suit. Like, have you seen that picture, Steve?
I had to look up the video of the bear before we got on here.
Yeah.
So I've seen the video, and I mean it does. It kind of looks like a guy. You can see like the way the skin hangs off of it in the back. It definitely looks like it would be a costume.
Yeah, he's got like a crinkly butt. Looks like he's in a saggy bear costume.
Right. Like some hipster with no butt.
Right, he looks like a hipster, for sure. She should have a chain and an IPA.
Yep, and black-rimmed glasses. he's obviously, like, domesticated.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, he's up there trying to chill with the people. He doesn't look angry.
Yeah, he's waving. He's obviously, so, like, I think that makes him more human in quality a little bit.
Yeah, that number one. But then number two, like, I've never seen a sun bear before. That's not a type of bear I've heard of.
No, and they appear to be kind of, like, long and skinnier, you know, less hairy, like, a shorter-haired animal. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool. Did you think it was a guy?
I did not. And the reason I didn't is because if you've got the video where it comes off of that glass, the next movement that it makes is way too animal. Like, no human could do that.
Oh, gotcha.
So,
no, I think I saw a different video.
Yeah. There's actually a video where it goes down onto four legs after propping itself up, and it's, like, just such a graceful transition into four legs, and once it's down, it doesn't look like a man at all.
You know, there is you might have more insight into this, but there is a psychological phenomenon where our brains are trained to see faces.
Oh, yeah.
In inanimate objects.
Yeah.
Like, so if we see, like, kind of a circular thing with, like, two dots toward the top and, like, something that could be a mouth at the bottom, like, our brain automatically fills in that that is a face. And there's some theory that it's an evolutionary thing. Like, we're supposed to look for faces because that could be predators or friends, and so we have to be trained to see the faces, you know,
right,
with the natural world having so much camouflage. But I think that we are, I don't know, I think some of it is a little bit of, like, egoism, like, species egoism, and we want to see human traits in animals. It's the same reason that we, like, want to see our animals show us love, or see things in them that, like, this animal loves me, you know,
when
really it's just, you know, hungry, or, you know, it's doing something that's not, it's not human at all, you know.
Yeah. That's called the fusiform face area, and it's the part of the brain that does look and recognize faces. And an interesting thing about that is there's a disorder where that's enlarged, and people that have that never forget a face. Never.
Okay.
I mean, assuming their memory's intact, right? Your memory's a different thing, but...
Right. You ever see a stingray's face?
I've seen a stingray, so I would assume I've seen a stingray's face, but whether or not you could call that shit a face, I don't know.
No, I mean, like, on the bottom of it, where its mouth is.
Okay, yeah, there's a mouth, and the eyes aren't on the bottom, are they?
I don't know if those are eyes or not. To be honest with you, I'm not. Look up, like, stingray face.
All right, let me look at stingray face. Okay, I see it. And those are the eyes. I can see the eyes there. It's actually extremely cute. It is, like, the cutest thing ever.
It looks like it's smiling.
It does. It looks like a and it's, smiley face. It looks like a Pokemon.
Yeah. It does. It just looks like anime.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, in fact, like, listeners, if you have never looked up a stingray face and don't know what we're talking about, look it up. It's like the cutest little fucker ever.
But that's it's not actually showing any emotion.
No.
It just we are kind of egotistically seeing. Well, not even say egotistically. Just you know we know what our own emotional traits are. That when we smile or frown or cry or whatever. And then when we see similar things in the animal kingdom, we ascribe those same emotions.
Right. Interesting thing about these stingray faces, though, is, like, there's a large variety of them. They don't all look the same.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's, like, different types, and I'm sure there's different, like, variations of stingrays. Like, they're not all the same exact breed or whatever you would call it. But there's different faces, right. Like, different ways the mouths go, but they're all adorable. They're, like, they're uniformly adorable.
They're so cute. I don't know. Like, I think, you know, I think the, we tend to look for human qualities in animals.
Right.
And I think successful animals can learn to mimic human qualities. You know, dogs can learn to express, affection the way that their masters want them to because it's a successful evolutionary trait.
Yeah, and it helps them get their needs met, which is kind of one of the major points of evolution, right? You adapt in ways that get your primary needs met. Yeah, for sure.
Which kind of reminds me of another one of your stories that you want to tell, the parrots.
Oh, the parrots is a badass story, I think. So, yeah.
You want to save that one later?
That was going to be the big finale, but we can go into it now if you want to jump into the parrots. What were you going to say in regard to that story?
Oh, no, I mean, like, you know, go ahead, tell the story.
Okay, so, yeah, in Lincolnshire Wildlife Center in the UK, there are 5 African grey parrots that are thick as thieves. They're buddies. They like to hang out together. And they've actually decided to separate them. So, not to get gloomy in our positivity podcast here, but they had to separate these parrots. But the reasoning being that these parrots all not only swear like sailors, but they encourage each other to swear. And they go as far as to tell the guests at the center to fuck off, right? And it actually, which as you can assume... A lot of people love it, and it actually is something that's kind of gimmicky, and people go there to see these cussing parrots. However, due to the large amount of young children that attend the zoo decided that they needed to separate these parrots so that they can no longer cuss out people in groups anyways, right? And then try to wean them off of swearing individually. So how do you feel about that? Because I don't have children, but to me, I'd be like, if my child learned how to swear, which they all eventually do, I would hope to God it was from these parrots.
That would be amazing. Also, you know what I just realized about that story is that these parrots are also swearing in a British accent.
Yes, they would be swearing in a British accent. I never thought of that.
So that just became much funnier to me in my head.
Yes, and if I could do
fuck off!
Nice. Fuck off, rightio.
Oh, fuck off, governor.
Governor. Oh, Lord. Yes. Like, yeah, for real. Like, if a parent said, fuck off, governor, to me and my child, and my child said, fuck off, governor, later in the day, I'd be like, all right, that's kind of funny. I would not discipline.
I mean, you know, I don't know. Do you think that curse words are inherently, you know, bad or evil or should be excluded from society?
No. I mean, you know that, like, I come from kind of a religious perspective, and I cuss all the time, and because I do believe that 100% the thing that matters the most is, number one, your intent, and number two, how you're directing it. Like, if I tell you to go fuck yourself because I'm angry at you, then not only was that cussing at you wrong, but it didn't even need to exist, because my anger at you, depending upon why I'm angry and if it's unfounded, the anger alone was enough to be wrong. So, like, the cussing is just a reflection of some of the wrongness that already existed, if that makes any sense.
There's nothing that I could do to deserve your anger?
No, you could. I said depending upon that, right? Like, if it was an unfounded anger. Like, if I'm mad at, like, if we have some quarrel for, like, years and I should have forgiven you forever ago, and in my heart I'm like, fuck that guy. Saying fuck that guy doesn't even matter, because my heart already said it anyways, right? Like, didn't the words don't matter.
You say fuck off instead of punching me. I think that's a win.
That's a win, right? Like, doing a cuss word instead of violence? Win.
I mean, I'm raising children, obviously. And, you know, I teach. And what parents find acceptable for their children varies so widely that, you know, I don't think we'll ever have a uniform standard for it. But it's, I don't know. As an English teacher, I have a hard time seeing certain words as more intrinsically evil than others.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say this as far as parenting, like, you are a parent, so correct me if I'm wrong in these regards, but just because I don't have children doesn't mean I don't have opinions, right? So my opinion would be this, and it's that you would want to teach your child not to swear, not because there's anything evil or wrong about it, but because, especially as far as getting a job and interacting in society, getting through school, getting to the things that they need in life, there are definitely going to be circumstances where swearing is an improper use of your vocabulary, right? Like, it's not giving you the reflection of yourself that you would need to exhibit to get into those. If you swear as an adult and it's in the right context and it's not in a position that's going to keep you from getting your needs met or fulfilling the, like, getting a job or those kind of things, then there's, and you're not hurting anybody with it, meaning you're not directly swearing at someone because you're, as I said earlier, like, angry at them over something that's kind of unfounded. Or, like, if an old lady cuts you off on the road and you say, go fuck yourself, you whatever, bleep, like, that's unfounded. That old woman didn't even realize you were there. Right? You're the only one being hurt by that anger, not her, right? True. So, you know, you see what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to teach your kids to swear, but I think once you get to a certain point, as long as they use it responsibly, it's also not a big deal.
Yeah, I'm picking your brain here a little bit. I'm definitely more of an action and intent person, you know. You know, I want my children to do the right thing, not say the right thing. You know, the say the right thing comes next, and whatever, you know, quote unquote right. And our parents' generation grew up, you know, like, the way the using curse words was just a sign of being lower class or mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And I think that that's a shift that, you know, maybe in our generation we care less about that. You know, I cared more, you know, to go back this weekend with my son playing football. You know, he had like four sacks. He plays on the defensive line and does, you know, football. But he had like four sacks and like two forced fumbles and recoveries.
That's awesome.
Like, you know, yanked the ball. Yeah, played a really great game.
He's a bruiser.
But he kind of is. He's a little tank. But I told him my favorite moment was you know, after. After a play, he's on, you know, he's playing defense, and they stopped him. I don't think he was even involved in the play, but one of the guys on the other team hurt his ankle or his foot somehow, and he's on the ground, but near the ball, you know, where they spot the ball, and he's his teammates had said, you know, come on, get up, come to the huddle, but he just stayed there, and the coaches were waiting for the officials to like call them out, and my son came, you know, from his position and went over and put his hand on his back and was checking on him.
That's awesome.
And, you know, that's a small thing, but...
But you know what, dude? Like, if it was, like, grown adults in the NFL who would never be mm-hmm. able to do that because, I mean, some would. But, like, it might be a small thing. But a child doing that? That's huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, nobody else was doing it. And he was there, and it made me happy that he had that kind of heart. And so the things that we say, I don't think... matter nearly as much, but you know, then again,
in context, I mean, if he's cussing out his teachers, that's a problem, right?
Like, yeah, well, but then that's intent, you know, like,
right.
But more than anything, I really want to hear in Great Barrett's cussing at tourists,
yes,
badly.
I mean, it would be great. I wish they had video, I'm gonna look for it later in case those videos exist. Because if these parrots have been cussing there for a while, which it sounds like they have, they've got videos. So.
Boy, Polly, this is a real shite.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. So we all, everyone listening also needs to look up the five parrots and try to find videos of the cussing parrots, because I'm sure it's even more amazing when you hear it in real life. So let's take a turn. We had talked a little bit about how I come from like a religious bent. So I want to look at the cat who accidentally becomes God. And what that is there's a cat named Clyde, and his owner, Amanda Hislop, took a photograph of him through a window, and it was the perfect reflection of clouds underneath him, so it looks like Clyde is standing on clouds, and she put it on Twitter. Now, it's not just a cat chilling on some clouds on Twitter, it's a cat standing on clouds on Twitter that got 1.5 million likes. So
yeah, that sounds like Twitter.
Yeah, right? So people love the F out of Cloud. Now, whether or not this is Twitter with the bird or Twitter once it became an X, I don't know. It was a recent story, but like I think it might have been within the last year. So it's possible it's pre-Elon Musk, but it's just amazing to me that I know cat pictures or cat videos and things get tons on Twitter, on TikTok, on Instagram, but it's really amazing that you can just take a picture of your cat and get 1.5 million likes. I mean, it's like almost borderline ridiculous that that can occur.
With all the conversation about social media, all of the dangers and the terrible things that have come from it, and all of the political and everything, isn't this what it was meant to be? Like, let me share something, you know, neat and interesting with you. And
yeah,
you interact with it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, maybe this is what its true intention was. Instead of now, it's become like a weapon to even more divide and politicize the world, right?
Right. Yeah. Have you ever seen there was a trend of people taking pictures where like they were looking down and their animal, I think it was dogs and maybe it was cats, would be looking up. And so then the bot, like, their chin was, like, covering up the person's chin, and it made it look like the person had, like, a frowny face. Does that ring a bell?
It sounds sort of familiar, but that's another thing I'd have to look up to recollect it. But it does sound familiar.
Basically, it was just playing with perspective.
Yeah, and it was, like, half the animal face, half the human face?
Yeah. And that was a trend for a minute, and, like... Yeah, that was adorable. Interesting. You know, but as all trends do, they become old very quickly and then get, you know,
shuffled aside.
My wife sends me pictures all the time of our animals doing different things. Like, we have a dog and two cats, and now there's talk of guinea pigs entering the mix.
Oh, Lord Jesus, no guinea pigs.
Yeah.
They're like rats.
Yeah, but they're like a rat if like they like
if it ate another rat.
They're like a rat that ate a rat. And is now full and slow.
Yeah, I never had guinea pigs growing up. You didn't either, right?
No. on.
Yeah,
everything.
I mean, the people that had guinea pigs, like, loved their guinea pigs. Like, Dave Hart had a guinea pig, loved his guinea pig, right? It was like, I don't know, man. Oh, Jimmy Putman had guinea pig, loved his guinea pig. It's, but people that don't have guinea pigs, I think, are just like, don't get it. I'm a don't get it person.
I don't know. I'll let you know when we get them.
Yeah, sure, if you will. Fall in love with this guinea pig, I definitely want to know about it.
Yeah. Yeah, once my wife decides, you know, we're doing something, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah. Assuming your giant dog does not eat the guinea pig.
You know, I don't think he's going to have a problem. Like, with the cats, we weren't really sure how that was going to go. And he just does not care that they exist.
Doesn't give two flying parrot-shaped Fs.
Nope. The two cats, one of them runs away every time he's in the room. The other one just comes up to him and, like, swats his tail. And in both instances, he just ignores them and keeps walking.
Yeah, so. You said one of your cats, you had told me a while ago, and I never checked back on the cat. It used to hide all the time. Is it they're both pretty much out there now?
Well, so the first little cat, Daisy, she is just scared of her own shadow. Like, she will not let anyone around her except for my son. My son has this very Dr. Dolittle quality about him. And
interesting.
Everywhere he goes, any animal he interacts with, people are amazed by it. And he just, animals flock to him. Like, I can't tell you how many times you've gone to somebody's house and he'll end up on a chair with their dog on his lap, and they're like, he's never done that for anyone else. That dog never likes anyone. And so he and that cat just have a relationship. This is the son too, who, like, last year when we took a trip out west to see you and Grand Canyon, while we were at the Grand Canyon, like, you know, 2 feet away from the edge, you know, like, looking around, he somehow managed to start petting a squirrel. There was a squirrel.
He pet like a squirrel at the Grand Canyon? Like a wild squirrel?
Yes, a wild squirrel at the Grand Canyon. And I say wild.
Yeah, I'm sure people feed them and stuff, but, like, people feed this ground squirrels here in Alameda, but they don't come all the way up to you. They'll get within a couple feet. That's about it.
Well, this one here was, I mean, he got up on a rock, and Oscar wasn't even feeding him. he just got up on a rock, and I...
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Holy shite.
And while I'm standing there having, like, in a terrible panic attack because my fear of heights has gotten...
Oh, I thought you were going to say panic attack because that thing could have fucking rabies.
Well, that too. Like, that was the second thing. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, my fear of heights is bad, dude. Grand Canyon is not, like, my most coveted thought. I've never been there, and I'm not necessarily trying to have that happen.
Yeah, it's beautiful, but, man, it just... Oh,
I mean, I would go. I just wouldn't get anywhere near the edge.
Yeah.
I'm sure it has a barrier, but I wouldn't get near the barrier.
There's some guardrails and stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't just drop straight down. There's, you know, some rock jetties and so on. But it's just being there, the power that radiates off of the canyon is immense. You can almost hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of Oscar and the squirrels, let's jump into Callie Clemens. Mm. She might not be a Dr. Dolittle like Oscar is, but she's definitely a hero for the puppies. So Callie Clemens, who actually is the ex-wife of Roger Clemens' son, she lives in Houston, Texas, and she crawls into storm drains in extreme heats to rescue abandoned puppies. And she actually gets, like, the city to unlock the storm drains for her. They've given her maps so that she can maneuver through the disturbing water and cockroaches and all the things that exist in these storm drains. And she has actually spent in a one-day period up to 9 hours looking for puppies in extreme heat in this stinky, gross storm drain. Yeah. Environment and storm in the storm grade. So, yeah. So she's, you know, she's out there helping puppies. So that's good. I know you had a few thoughts on her.
I wonder what she do that she can just take days and days to to go into storm drains and rescue puppies. Like, I mean, her ex-husband's father was a, you know, professional athlete.
But right, the way he
translates into, like, I mean, does that mean, like, he got a lot in alimony? Like, does she, is she independently wealthy? Like, because it seems like to be able to take the time to do that, you have to be somewhat, you know, financially secure.
Yeah,
I'm just imagining that. But then, do you ever see the videos on, you know, whatever, pick your favorite social media network, of like, of people who go and rescue stray animals, you know, in cities, and then they kind of do a little video of the animal as it, you know, recovers and gets better.
No, I have not. But no, it doesn't. No, but it doesn't surprise me that it exists.
Yeah, I mean, like, there are people that go out and do this on a regular basis, and even like I have a former student who I would see posting on whatever platforms, you know, like Facebook, whatever. That, you know, like, oh, I, you know, ran across three lanes of traffic today to pick up a kitten that I saw. You know, it's a wonderful thing to do. Our cat, the Daisy's the skittish one. Now our other cat, Lucky, this big orange blob, he is about as friendly and docile as a cat gets. He was found by the side of a road by our vet, and so we are lucky to have him. That's where he gets his name. He's lucky that he got saved, but. There's a lot of people that go out and do this kind of work.
Right, but they aren't like one of the top stories you find when you look up positive things that are happening in the world.
Right. I wonder, I guess it's her name that does it.
Yeah, I'm thinking that
she's in Houston, in Texas, and she's connected to Roger Clemens. I mean, he was the biggest thing in Texas when he was a pitcher.
Right, and you got to think that maybe the fact that the city's actually opening these storm drains and giving her maps and actually aiding her is because of that as well.
Yeah, you got to imagine she's got the connections to do that.
Right, and she does kind of throw shade at the city. I mean, she's doing a good thing. She's saving puppies, but she says she has to do it because the city isn't really stepping up and doing what they're supposed to do. Meanwhile, the city's doing everything they can to aid her in this, so it just seems kind of mean to be like, hey, help me do this, and now I'm going to throw shade at you.
Yeah, I mean, if she's doing what she needs to do, if she's an advocate for the ASPCA or whoever or whatever, if she has an organization or just, you know, just in general for animals, you know, she's her job, or she, you know, she sees it as her job to advocate for more resources from the city, so she's going to say that in the hopes that pressure will be put on them and they'll allocate like another job position at the animal control or they'll whatever. But yeah, I mean, you know, a big city like Houston, you know, I'm sure there's far more problems than there are resources. That's just the way kind of society works.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, so she, I mean, she's doing a great thing. She's saving puppy lives, and
yeah,
that can't be bad.
Oh.
So take that.
Now those videos of people saving, you know, strays, oh, they break my heart. They're so cute. You know, it's just...
Do they break your heart more than the Sarah McLachlan commercial for the SPCA?
I will.
Now, the arms of an angel. The arms of an angel. And then they show, like, dogs with, like, one eye, and they look like they haven't eaten for a week.
I think while you were singing that, I think you went to a high enough register that only dogs could hear it.
That was the whole plan.
Oh, what a terrible commercial. What a terrible...
Yeah, I mean, it's needed, but it's so depressing.
Oh, yeah, no. No one who's seen it will ever forget that.
No.
Sometimes I'll bring it up in class, and even teenagers today, they are like, oh, they know it.
It's
know
rough. That. It's rough.
Yeah, it is. I know. You know who's a really big advocate for animals is Ricky Gervais.
Who's that?
You know, the comedian, British comedian Ricky Gervais. He did the British version of The Office. He was the Michael Scott character in that.
Oh, okay.
He did a show on Netflix called Afterlife.
Okay, I have actually seen that. I know who he is then. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And he's a huge animal rights activist. Does nice. A lot of work, puts a lot of resources into the ASPCA. And well, I'm not sure if that's the organization that he backs, but for a while, I think in Twitter's heyday, he would get into some pretty epic, fighting or the arguments with people about animals.
Nice. Mm-hmm. That's good. Animals definitely need advocates. Hey, did you know that he is actually touring right now?
Oh, doing stand-up?
Yeah, doing stand-up tour. Did you know who's opening for him?
Who's that?
5 African gray parrots.
I thought you were going to say Carrot Top.
No, oh, shit, bro. Carrot Top reminds me of Dimitri Martin, who I actually also used to like. And the reason I say that is because it's the same as, like, Gallagher, who I also used to like. But it's like year after year after year, you watch them do their specials, and 90% of it's the same exact material. Like, they don't even try to pick to, like, fucking change that shit up.
No, it's gross.
It's gross. It's like, people love it. Let me do it forever.
It's that weird prop comedy.
Yes. And I'm good with the weird prop comedy if every single time you have a different show.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is just a vague memory, but wasn't Gallagher a terrible human being?
I don't know.
Did he do some really awful things too?
I don't know. If he was, I didn't know about it.
No, it's funny because I remember when Gallagher came to Canton, to our hometown. You remember that?
I do not.
When we were young.
Oh, was he at the Palace Theater? Kids.
Yep.
Oh, I do remember. I do remember.
Well, it was just, it's funny because, like, as everybody's clamoring to get Taylor Swift tickets, I was trying to think back, like, what was comparable when I was a kid?
Gallagher.
Oh, Gallagher. Gallagher tickets. For those of you listeners who don't know who Gallagher is, you can go ahead and YouTube him, but he was a comedian who made every punchline him taking a very large wooden mallet and smashing a watermelon on stage.
Yes.
He was weird.
He was weird, and his hair is connected to his hat. Like, his hair is not real, it's connected to his hat. So, Gallagher was...
No, I'm pretty sure he was a monster of a person. Correct?
I mean, it sounds possible, because he did like to smash shit with a big mallet, which could show anger issues.
While wearing rainbow suspenders.
Right. He was a little bit odd. He was an odd character. But definitely worth a one lookup, but don't look at more than one video because, as I said, it's going to be the same. Nothing changes. Nothing at all. All right. Where were we? We were talking about what? Callie Clemens being the savior of animals. Now,
let's
talk about an animal being the savior of a whole family. So in 2021 in Virginia, a runaway dog, before it gets reunited with its family, saves a whole other family. It's like been like seen in the neighborhood looking like a stray animal, and it sleeps in this like shelter area, and I don't mean like a real shelter, like a little makeshift area by this family's house, and the house catches on fire, and this dog just sits outside barking relentlessly until the family realizes something's wrong, and they go check upstairs, and their upstairs is on fire where their kids are. They're able to get everyone out, and so this dog saves this entire family. And then because of all the publicity from saving this family, they're able to find its actual owners and reunite it with their owners. So thank God this dog ran away, because the whole family is alive because of it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Super awesome, right?
That is awesome.
And it's amazing. It's just one of those things where it's like, had that dog been like restrained to where it couldn't have gotten out of its home, like you could have had like the loss of lives of like children and stuff. So it's like one of those just random miracles that occurs. I know you don't like me crediting anything to a miracle, but I'm going to say it. Random miracle.
Well, I don't come from the same religious background that you do. Let's just say that. And I mean,
what the hell is that, bro? Speaking of animals, did you just cough up a fucking hairball? Sounds like you coughed up like a pound of hair, bro.
I just coughed a little bit. It was like... Well,
Lord.
My microphone's a little
chew.
But, things can be miraculous without, I guess, what maybe the better word is, serendipitous. Mm-hmm.
Like it's, yes, because the statement you were about to make, I would have been on, because you were about to say, things can be miraculous without being connected to God. And I was going to say, in fact, that's completely the not definition of miraculous. But serendipitous, right. I'll give you that.
Like, did this wonderful thing happen because a larger power wanted it to happen for you, or just because happenstance in the universe and whatever? But also, you know, like...
I forgot to say the dog's name, by the way, which is hugely important. His name's Butter.
Butter.
Yeah.
That's a great name for a dog.
It's
I have
awesome.
To assume that the dog was either a yellow lab or a golden retriever.
Yeah, they show a picture. He's a yellow lab.
Okay, alright. Because otherwise, the name Butter doesn't... Like, if you were to name him a brown dog Butter, you shouldn't be allowed to have a dog.
Right.
No, my wife did not want to get a dog when we were first married and when we had Oscar. She'd had some really bad experiences with dogs, and she just was not a dog person. She was a cat person, wanted to do that. And so Oscar, since the minute he could walk, was obsessed with animals. As I said, he's got that Dr. Doolittle quality. And so I can't say that I tried to kind of push it along. I would make sure to always point out dogs when we were in public so that when he sees them, he can go get excited and obviously put more pressure on my wife to, maybe we have to get a dog.
So you're manipulative.
So, absolutely, 100%. Using him to manipulate her. And so eventually, and he, trust me, he never stopped begging for a dog. He was always going to do that. But eventually she said, all right, you know, I think we need to look for a dog. And so we got our dog, Axel. And he was a little bigger than she thought he was going to be, than we thought. We thought he was going to be a medium size. He ended up being a pretty large dog. But first he was, you know, he was very hyper, and he struggled with his, you know, energy. It was a little intimidating to her. And early on, I was at home doing dishes when somebody rang the doorbell, and my son was in the living room, like, watching a video. And he was about, you know, 3.5 to 4 at that point, big enough that he could move and open the door, but we hadn't really discussed, because we didn't get many, you know, people visiting, you know, coming to the door.
Right.
We hadn't talked enough about, like, no, you don't answer the door, you know, we do. So I'm cleaning off my hands to go answer the door when I come around the corner and my son is opening the door, and I'm like, ah, crap. And so as I'm walking up the hallway, the dog comes up behind Oscar, pushes him out of the way, and then places himself between the screen door and Oscar to stare at the person. And it was some salesman.
Right.
And the salesman saw the dog, and he's, like I said, a very large dog. He backed up off the porch and onto the yard, kind of with his hands raised, like, oh, we're good. And the dog wasn't barking or anything, but it was enough to intimidate him. And when I told my wife about that, I honestly think that was the first time that she really cared about the dog. You know, she saw that
he's going to protect.
He was a protector, yeah. And then later on that year, she got a kidney stone. Came on suddenly, and I've never had it, but the pain that she was in, like the agony, I hope that I never have one. But so she, you know, we had to go to the hospital, got some pain medication, and, you know, found out if, you know, what was going to happen, she was going to have to pass it. So I brought her home, and, you know, she went upstairs to lay in bed, and that dog for 36 hours would not leave her side. Stayed by the bed, and it was, you know, it was a simple thing, and all he did was lay, but he endeared himself to her then, and ever since then, he's been a welcome part of the family.
Yeah, it's awesome. Mandy wanted me to also bring up, which fits in really well with this, as Axel was at least by her side and doing a little bit of loving, because that's sometimes all you need when you're hurting. When she went through her stroke stuff, they did bring like service dogs into the hospital to give comfort to the patients, and she said that that was like huge and helping her like emotionally through that time period. So animals definitely are great for being comfort animals and service animals, and just really helping bring people's spirits up. I know they're used a lot also in like nursing homes, right, to help older adults to stay positive when they don't have a lot of visitors and things like that, to keep them company, right? So yeah,
they even had programs in prisons where prisoners can help to train service dogs, and in turn they're kind of receiving a service themselves while they're there,
right, by interacting.
That's a nice program. But I got two things for you as well. One, my Axel, I do think he's a service dog, because we also have fostered. We're a foster family, and so we fostered five different children, and every single one of them, that dog has slept in their bed the first night they're in the house. And wow. I don't think it's, I mean, I it's never, I'm never, we've never told him to do that. We've never, you know, but he has a sense of emotional need.
Yeah.
He definitely does. But I do have kind of an opposite story real quick that I thought of while we were looking at this. It's not as positive, but I do think it's pretty funny. So this story is actually from 1908. And it's about a Newfoundland dog, which I don't know if you know, but that's a very large, big, hairy dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is, the story begins with a Newfoundland dog that heard a child screaming for help after they had fallen into the River Seine. The dog, to its credit, searched for the source of the screaming before diving into the river and rescuing him, like, you know, like a lassie. So far, so good. However, according to the story, the problems began when the dog was rewarded with a nice big slab of meat, which we'd like, we'd still say is a slightly a cheap reward for saving a human child, right? Mm-hmm. But unknowingly, they had provided motivation for bad behavior. The dog now realized that saving children was a path.
Oh, God.
And it didn't have the moral fortitude to simply wait for them to fall in by themselves. So a few days later, a second child was playing by the Seine when he fell in too. The same dog, though noticeably fuller of beef, jumped back into the river, saving a second child. Again, the dog was given some meat, reinforcing its hunch. So there's a pattern. The pattern of risk continues.
So the dog's going to start knocking people into the river.
Right. And so much so that there was a suspicious number of kids falling into the same over a brief time scale. This story was actually run in the New York Times. The dog, a fake hero, back in 1908, about this dog that was going around pushing kids into the river and then saving them and then getting a big slab of meat as his reward.
Wow, that's a mess. But it was classically conditioned to rescue children, and it's going to rescue them whether they needed it in the first place or not. So, yeah, there you go.
That's right. So hopefully this dog that saved this family was not...
a fire starter? That dog is an arsonist? Wow.
Yeah, let's hope his reward was a comfy home, maybe.
But, yeah. All right, so let's look at one more dog. This actually happened last month, August 3rd, 2023. A dog named Bunny was hit by a car. Bunny had to have surgery, and her back two legs were amputated. But Mercedes-Benz teamed up with a company called Eddie's Wheels, which is a company that makes custom wheelchairs for dogs, and they were able to get Bunny completely mobile with her Mercedes-Benz wheelchair, so Bunny gets to roll in style.
Aw, that's cute. Why would you name your dog Bunny?
I have no idea. Bunny is not a bunny. It's like getting a bunny and naming it dog.
Yeah, which I kind of want to do now. I think if
you should get a guinea pig and name it Snake.
I'm going to name him Chinchilla.
People will be like, you know this isn't a chinchilla, right? You're not stupid.
This is chinchilla. The guinea pig.
Yeah.
I wonder why Mercedes-Benz donated to this particular
dog. They said they saw videos. So this was another thing like that people do a lot, right, where these animals that go through traumas and stuff, they do those videos, right, where they show them from beginning to end. And Bunny, they showed Bunny at the end where Bunny now has had the legs amputated, but Bunny is functional and Bunny's happy. And they saw this video and they wanted to improve Bunny's life, so they teamed up and made it. So it was from seeing the videos that the video owner, they were posting on social media.
Oh, okay. All right. See, again, they're social media doing something positive.
Right? And Mercedes-Benz saw it, and someone there had a heart, too, and was like, let's do the right thing. This is help this dog out. So that's cool.
Oh, which is a great to market your brand, but also a nice thing to do, so I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
Right.
Now, was it a self-driving wheelchair?
No, it was self-driving. By you mean Bunny had to pull with the front legs, or
no, like
it drives itself. Like, no, Bunny had to pull with the front. Bunny had to move herself around.
Was it electric?
No, it was like a wheelchair. No. Yeah, I saw a picture. It didn't look electric. It looked like Bunny had to pull herself around, but it was cool. It was made by Mercedes,
yeah,
bro.
I'm sure it's designed. Yeah, I'm sure it's designed well. I wonder if they have, like, Mercedes logos all over it.
Yeah. I'm sure, actually, Eddie's Wheels probably made it, the majority of it. Mercedes just allowed them to put the logo on, right?
Yeah. So. But still, pretty awesome.
Yeah, very cool.
No, that's cool. That's cute.
All right, guys.
All right.
So that's it. That's all our stories. That is our first episode of Proclivity for Positivity, where we look at positive things in the world, right? And so, like I said, our first episode, we wanted to come in gently and start with animals, but it kind of gives you a showing of what we're aiming to do here.
You know what I want to do for next week?
What's that?
I want you to find your favorite story, and I will find my favorite story, and then we will share them, and we will see whose is better.
Okay, and we'll share them blind. We don't know each other's story. Each one of us will present, and then we'll see what we think.
I like it.
Awesome.
We got a plan for week 2.
Awesome. All right, guys, so thank you for joining us for our inaugural episode of Proclivity for Positivity. I am Ben. And this other guy is clearly not going to tell you his name.
And I am Steve.
And that's it. We did it. So you can find us on ThroughTheAbyssPodcast.com and all of our links to Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, all that stuff's there. So, yeah, check us out. And thank you again for joining us. Have a good day.
Bye.
We have a proclivity for positivity.